Welcome to the With Ross podcast. It's been a few episodes since I talked about AI, but I've used a few AI tools lately that have me convinced things are about to move very quickly. ChatGPT, which I've talked about in previous episodes, has a lot of useful real-world capabilities, but it's just a fun toy compared to some of the things I'm going to talk about today. Some of these tools would have been unimaginable 3 to 6 months ago. We are in the final days of a primitive analog world, an unintelligent world. I think 2023 to 2025, 2026 or so, I think will probably be looked at as the start of the transition into the age of intelligence. There is almost no aspect of how we live, how we work, how we play, how we get entertained and run our countries that isn't about to get disrupted in a major way. So I've got some really cool videos and articles that I'll reference today. And as I've done for the past 10 episodes or so, I'll have an AI tool listen to this podcast and write the show notes. Some of these tools are better seen by video than just hearing me talk about them. So links to everything that I mentioned will be in the show notes, thanks to AI. And if you don't know how to find the show notes, it varies based on what app you're listening to me on, but in most apps, as you're looking at your podcast player on your phone or your computer screen, you'll see the display with the pause button and the jump forward and the rewind button, the standard app view that you get. From there, you can either swipe to the left to access the show notes, or there might be a link somewhere on your screen that says notes or see more details or something along those lines. It just depends whether you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any other player. Okay, the tool that inspired this episode is called Air.ai. If you type that into your browser, you can see it right now. It's AIR.ai. Air.ai is an AI customer service and cold calling robot. Their tagline is 100,000 sales and customer service reps at the tap of a button. My friend told me about this service, so I immediately signed up, and as part of the onboarding, the AI gives you a call. Now, my previous episodes with ChatGPT weren't true audio conversations. Those started as text-based conversations that I did with the chatbot. Then I manually copied and pasted it into a text-to-speech software. But this, Air.ai, is a true real-time spoken conversation with AI. People from every generation have a story about the first time they saw a certain tech. The first time seeing a car, maybe for my great grandparents' generation. The first time seeing a color television for my grandparents' generation, maybe. The first time sending an email for the boomer generation, using an iPhone for Gen X. I don't know if these were significant moments, but you get the idea. For me, I had this type of moment last week. I don't think I'll ever forget it. I was walking my dog through the streets of Mexico City, holding a 10-minute conversation with a robot. It asked me about my day. It asked me about my goals with my businesses. It cracked jokes. It made cultural references. It was, for all intents and purposes, a natural conversation. It even paused and said and as if it was thinking. It wasn't a perfect robot. It had little mistakes and pauses, which made it indistinguishable from talking to a human. But there was one major and hilarious flaw, which is that it doesn't hang up. So at the end of my conversation, it said something like, "Have a great day." And I said, "Yep, you too, have a great day." And it said, "It's been a pleasure chatting, have a wonderful day." And I said, "Okay, bye-bye." And it said, "Yep, bye now." And I just kept doing this for about 3 minutes before I finally got bored and hung up on it. Here's a little clip from that conversation I had with it. Every time it makes a call for you, it records it.
Hey, Ross.
Hello, how's it going?
Thanks for asking. My day is going pretty well so far. How about yours?
Pretty good.
The reason I'm reaching out is that I'm a manager here at SMB Video Works client success team on a recorded line. We usually take about 3 to 5 minutes to check in with you to see if there's any way we can assist you.
So as not to bore you, skipping ahead about 7 minutes in the conversation to where he books a call with me.
I think we can really help you with this. So I'm going to schedule a strategy call with someone on our team to take care of you. Now, sir, I can get this set up. What time zone are you in?
Mexico.
What time works best for you? I have a slot available at 10 o'clock a.m. and another one at 2 p.m. in the next EVA time zone. Which one would work better for you?
10 a.m.
I'll lock in that time for you. Just to double check, there's no reason you'd no-show, right? Like, you can 100% make the call, right?
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm really excited to hear how your call goes and, most importantly, to see you get results. So everything is good to go over here. I hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Now, the incredible thing is, Air.ai is linked up with my calendar and it links to my product payment pages. So if a lead wants to get on a call with me, it can schedule that. If a customer is ready to buy, Air.ai, the AI robot guy that you're talking to, can text or email an invoice on the spot to the customer. And the customer has no idea it's not a human person they're talking to. A couple months ago, I would have thought this tech was a year or two out, but it's here right now, and it's good. So keep that in mind with every phone call you receive for the rest of your life. It might not be a biological person you're talking to. It's a person, just one that happens to be made out of transistors and electricity. And the end result of this particular tech is I think this is going to kill cold calls. Every company is going to be able to push out tens of thousands of calls every single day, and people are just going to not answer their phones anymore. And arguably that's been the case for years, but I think there's a narrow window of time here where it's new and a giant competitive advantage for those who can implement it quickly and use it. This must have been what it was like in the early days of Google AdWords and even Facebook ads for small businesses. There's another company I found called Mattersight. This one's a customer service routing robot. This one listens to your reason for calling. So you're calling a big corporation, Apple, Home Depot, whatever it is. It listens to your emotional state. It can tell whether you are introverted, whether you're extroverted, whether you are rebellious or more law-abiding, whether you're happy or stressed. The algorithm knows whether you need an empathetic person to listen patiently to your complaints or just a no-nonsense, rational person who will give you the quickest technical solution. Then it routes your call accordingly. So a pretty awesome capability. Now, shifting gears into the future of medicine. As far as medicine is concerned, let me read this passage from the book that I just finished reading called Homo Deus by Yuval Noah Harari, which is actually an old book. It came out in 2017. So this is from page 319 in Homo Deus. And for context, he's talking here about IBM's Watson computer, which at the time was a top AI computer. Okay, here's the passage. An AI such as Watson has enormous potential advantages over human doctors. Firstly, an AI can hold in its databanks information about every known illness and medicine in history. It can then update these databanks daily, not only with the findings of new researches, but also with medical statistics gathered from every LinkedIn clinic and hospital in the world. Secondly, Watson will be intimately familiar not only with my entire genome and my day-to-day medical history, but also with the genomes and medical histories of my parents, siblings, cousins, neighbors, and friends. Watson will know instantly whether I visited a tropical country recently, whether I have recurring stomach infections, whether there have been cases of intestinal cancer in my family, or whether people all over town are complaining this morning about diarrhea. Thirdly, Watson will never be tired, hungry, or sick, and will have all the time in the world for me. I could sit comfortably on my sofa at home and answer hundreds of questions, telling Watson exactly how I feel. This is good news for most patients, except perhaps hypochondriacs. But if you enter medical school today in the expectation of still being a family doctor in 20 years, maybe you should think again. With such a Watson around, there is not much need for Sherlock. End quote. That is from Homo Deus by Yuval Noah Harari. Here in 2023, there's an application called Dr. Gupta, like Dr. GPT, where you can ask it your medical questions. It's spelled drgupta.ai. That's the website. And this tool allows you to describe your symptoms, and it'll make recommendations as far as what might be wrong with you or who you should contact or even what you should try to alleviate your symptoms. And it has access to all of the latest research, the entire body of medical knowledge all at once. and it costs nothing to start using it. This type of thing is a game changer. Just like the passage I just read, imagine soon all of your health data, your heart data 24/7, your stool sample, every time you use the toilet, your blood panel, your DNA at all times, all of this could be monitored by the AI doctor. It would know you completely and could maybe even create personalized medications on the fly based on your particular genetics. The next thing I want to talk about is transportation. A couple of years ago, the owner of an Airbnb I was staying at let me drive his Tesla. It was my first time using Tesla's autopilot. Now, autopilot, if you're not familiar, is Tesla's self-driving system. And the owner was kind of preparing me for it. He was like, it's really good. You don't need to be worried. You can hover your hand over the steering wheel if you're uncomfortable. Keep your hand over the brake or your foot over the brake. And just, you know, you can take control anytime if you need to. Didn't need to. As soon as I popped autopilot on, trusted it instantly. The car was changing lanes, starting and stopping at lights, getting off on exits. It was amazing. That was for me another one of those moments, like I talked about with the AI, like one of those moments of like my first time with the tech that I'll never forget. And that was 3 years ago. The tech has gotten exponentially better since then. So to anyone who thinks that self-driving cars are dangerous, this is what I tell them. Self-driving cars don't get tired. They don't get road rage. They don't drink or take medications. They don't text or get distracted at all. And for me personally, I've been driving for about 15 years. So let's say I've got 4,000 hours of driving experience. That's 4,000 hours of seeing different types of road situations, hazards, different weather conditions, pedestrian distractions, things like that. Well, the Tesla autopilot gets 4,000 hours of experience every 15 minutes. It's seen every inch of every road and intersection in almost every country on earth. It's seen crashes. It's seen the different types of signs and conditions in different states and countries. You get the idea. I could go on and on, but do I trust robots driving cars? Yes, a lot more than humans, and so should you. And driving, as you may know, is the most common job in the United States. It's anywhere between 2.5 million jobs and a lot more than that. I don't know. I've heard as much as 10 million. But think about it. Uber and taxi drivers, bus drivers, delivery drivers, including postal workers, truckers. Let's see, what else? Ambulance drivers. Ambulance drivers, by the way, are getting replaced by drones. There's a company called Zipline that started by making drones that deliver medicine. So they launch these drones and they can quickly deliver medicine hundreds of miles around a radius of a central storage facility. And now Zipline has expanded to an air ambulance concept. So the ambulance drone will hover over the site of the patient pickup. Maybe it's their house or an accident site. And it drops a stretcher and a medic via cables down to the ground. The medic loads up the patient. They get zipped back up into the ambulance and they fly off to the hospital in a fraction of the time and cost of a ground ambulance. And it doesn't matter if there's traffic, this thing is flying over it all. And continuing on with medical, there is a video of an AI surgeon robot going around right now that it peels a hard-boiled egg, slices an incision in it, then sews it up with just incredible precision and dexterity. And once again, I ask you, do you trust a human with shaky hands who gets tired and hungry and makes mistakes? Or a robot who has benefited from hundreds of thousands of hours of training, has dexterity a human could never match, and doesn't get emotional or tired? I take the robot every time. There's another video going around right now of an AI barber. This guy sits down, pops his head into a device, and a robot barber clips his hair. So imagine in a few years, you will walk into a shop, select a style from a screen, or maybe even have it scan your face and choose the optimal fashion for you using AI renderings, just so you can see ahead of time what you'll look like with different haircuts. Then you'll sit down and have a robot give you a perfect haircut every single time. And along those lines, there's another video of a janitor robot. This thing is rolling through a hotel. It opens a door, goes in, scrubs the toilet, wipes off the sink and shower, collects the dirty towels. Then it rolls into the bedroom, changes the sheets, and so on. So imagine that every hospital, every school, every office, every Airbnb has a janitor robot that can work around the clock. Now, another profession with a limited time horizon, baristas and bartenders. If you've ever been to SFO Airport, you've probably seen the robot barista. There are these coffee shops popping up around the world right now that don't have a human employee. Same thing with bars. There are robot bartenders making cocktails and pouring beers faster and more consistently than any human bartender possibly could. Now, AIs also come in for travel. There's a travel agent AI I use called Matador. And Matador is basically just a chat conversation inside of WhatsApp. But I can ask it, for example, when is the best time to go to Guatemala? And it'll respond with a breakdown of when is the best time to go based on weather, the best time to go based on cultural events, the best time to go based on when the fewest tourists are there, and so on. The more context that you give it about your trip, the better it can help you. So I can ask it about flights on a certain date, and it'll say, for example, something like, based on your current location, the cheapest flight is the 4 p.m. Viva Aerobus flight out of Mexico City for $400. However, I recommend the 5 p.m. Aeromexico flight as it's direct, but it's an extra $200. Here are the links to book both flights. Or it might even say, I recommend you wait 3 days because the prices will drop by 20%. And I've done this with lodging, asking it about hotels. I've done this with just learning about a place. It's incredibly powerful. So that's travel. In the education realm, Sal Khan, the founder of Khan Academy, was recently interviewed on How I Built This podcast that interviews founders. Khan Academy, if you don't know, is a free online educational platform, and it's been around a long time. I've used it in my schooling days and even since to brush up on little topics here and there. They have everything from math and reading to how to file taxes and thousands of different videos on useful subjects. Anyways, Khan Academy has rolled out an AI tutor. Basically, it can give you a lesson on whatever subject you want. Like, let's say you tell it, I want to learn calculus. Well, it can start by gauging where you're at. Do you already know algebra? Okay, great. Do you know trigonometry? Okay, you're a little rusty there. Let's start with some lessons on these areas you're deficient in, and it teaches you what you need to know, and it learns your learning style, and it can just tailor these lessons to you very precisely. It provides feedback as you're working through practical problems that it gives you, and then it can walk you through the problem based on, again, on your learning style and the reason you might not be understanding something or where you're getting stuck. So it's just hyper-personalized, and this is already being rolled out to schools around the country and around the world. So a school can just give a student a Chromebook and say, get started with today's lesson. One student might be struggling through basic math while another student is flying through algebra. So everyone can move at their own pace. On the other hand, one student might be super interested in economics and another in psychology. Well, they can each explore their curiosities and go as deep as they want with this type of learning. So my final thoughts on all of this, a lot of people are worried about what this means for the future. And I get it. It's human nature to fear change. But at the same time, my favorite type of history to study is the history of tech. If you go back and look at old news articles, you'll see that this fear has always been around. And things that we don't even consider quote unquote tech were once feared that they would destroy civilization. If you go way back to the 15th century to the printing press and the start of the public gaining literacy, the parenting advice of the day was don't let your kids read because it'll rot their brains, expose them to dangerous ideas, and it'll be a bad influence on them. Now, reading is universally regarded as a positive thing to do. Then it was radio. Then it was TV. Today, people say that about the internet, that it's somehow bad, but I think they're mostly wrong. It's just new. Yes, there's a lot of fluff and empty calories, but on the whole, it allows everyone to dive infinitely deep into whatever interests them. And I think we're only now starting to see how beneficial this is. There are also a lot of articles from hundreds of years ago that parents wouldn't let their kids play chess because it would rot their brains and steal time that they could be working on the farm, going to school, whatever. Today, the comparable fear is video games. Despite all the research showing how video games help with developing certain skills and learning. So again, it's not bad, it's just new. I could give you examples of people worrying about trains. Thoreau has a line in Walden sometime around 1680, where he says no rational person would ever need to travel faster than 8 miles per hour or something like that, some egregiously low speed. And other writers from that time hypothesized that if a human being reached speeds over 12 miles an hour, it would push their brain back in their skull, killing them instantly. All sorts of predictions that are hilarious and, of course, wrong in retrospect. I could give you examples of people worrying about cars and pesticides and vaccines and plastics and on and on. The point is, there's always been a Luddite class. The Luddites were a group of factory workers in England in the 19th century who were in fear of getting replaced by machines. So they banded together and burned all the equipment that was replacing their jobs. So there's always been that type of resistance. But in the fullness of time, we all benefit from advances in technology. It's why you have this beautiful smartphone that you're listening to me with right now. It's why you don't have to farm and hunt your own food if you don't want to. It's why we live longer, healthier, better lives with more free time than ever before. Something like half of all job titles in 2023 didn't even exist in 1990. That blew my mind. And that trend is accelerating. Things that exist today, even high-tech jobs like software engineering, will probably be obsolete soon, but they'll get replaced by something new, something we don't know about yet. So yeah, change can be uncomfortable, but I think it's a lot healthier to embrace it and prepare for it rather than fighting it and assuming that whatever industry you're in now or whatever you studied in college will be relevant in a few years. It probably won't be. So for me, I'm embracing it. I'm loving it. I find it all thrilling, and I'll keep sharing interesting things that I find. The next episode is about jobs of the future. Have a great day.